Hello and welcome back to The Fall of the Roman Empire. It's Nick Holmes and this is episode 88 called Burying the Dead. In the last episode, we heard how the bubonic plague first appeared at the port of Pelusium in Egypt in the summer of 541, before spreading in all directions. Pelusium was itself an excellent conduit for the spread of the disease, since it was a major port on the primary route from India to the Mediterranean. Its remains are situated today near the Suez Canal, and in ancient times it was close to its Roman equivalent, a canal linking the Nile to the Red Sea, first dug by the pharaohs and later extended by the Emperor Trajan. Enter an important additional source for our knowledge of the plague, John, the Bishop of Ephesus. John was in Egypt when the plague struck, and he made his way from there to Constantinople, literally in tandem with the route taken by the disease as it spread. Somehow he survived and collated his memories into a book of the plague, which he later integrated into a longer work of ecclesiastical history. Unlike Procopius, who only saw the effect of the plague on Constantinople, John witnessed it spread like wildfire across the Roman Empire, and his account is clear that it devastated not just cities, but also the countryside. And even ships at sea found themselves stranded with their crew all dead, like a plague-induced version of the Marie Celeste. John's account is longer and more detailed about the extent of human suffering than Procopius's. Indeed, reading it is a sobering and moving experience I would recommend to anyone interested in the history of pandemics. The overriding impression from John's account is one of horror unleashed by the plague. Houses became family tombs. Quote, houses large and small, beautiful and desirable, which suddenly became tombs for their inhabitants, and in which servants and masters at the same time suddenly fell dead, mingling their rottenness together in their bedrooms, and not one of them escaped who might remove their corpses out from within the house. End quote. Streets were filled with dead bodies. Quote, others who perished falling in the streets to become a terrible and shocking spectacle for those who saw them, as their bellies were swollen and their mouths wide open, throwing up pus like torrents, their eyes inflamed and their hands stretched out upwards and over the corpses rotting and lying on streets and in the porches of courtyards and in churches and burial grounds and everywhere, with nobody to bury them. End quote. It wasn't just the cities and towns which were filled with the dead. John also describes a horrifying countryside silent with dead people and untended livestock wandering through the desolation. Quote, cattle abandoned and roaming scattered over the mountains with nobody to gather them. Flocks of sheep, goats, oxen and pigs, which had become like wild animals, having forgotten life in a cultivated land and the human voice which used to lead them. End quote. The fields lay deserted with crops rotting. Quote, fields in all the countries through which we passed, from Syria to Thrace, abundant in grain, which was becoming white and stood upright, but there was none to reap or gather in. End quote. John describes ships where all the crew were dead, drifting in the ocean. Quote, ships in the midst of the sea whose sailors were suddenly attacked by God's wrath, and the ships became tombs for their captains, and they continued to drift on the waves, carrying the corpses of their owners. End quote. John ascribed the catastrophe to punishment by God for the sins of humankind. Quote, at the sight of these things, we had occasion also to recall what had previously been said by the blessed prophet when he prophesied, saying, the earth shall be laid utterly waste and be utterly despoiled. And the earth shall be utterly stirred up, and shall utterly totter, and shall be utterly shaken, and shall quiver like a hut, and in its iniquity shall prevail over it. And it shall be burned again, like an oak which fell out from its acorn cup. All these things were completely fulfilled in our days, not over a long period, but in a short time. End quote. When John reached Constantinople, his account is remarkably similar to that of Procopius. Both describe the city gripped by terror and death. Procopius emphasizes the superstition of its inhabitants, who believed demons were visiting them. Quote, visions of demons taking every imaginable form were seen by many people, and those who encountered them believed that they were being struck on some part of their body by that man whom they met. End quote. All commercial activity ceased, according to John. Quote, the entire city then came to a standstill, as if it had perished, so that its food supply stopped. There was nobody to stand and do his job, with the result that food vanished from the markets and great tribulation ensued, especially for the people prostrate with exhaustion from illness. Only a few were strong enough to bring to any bazaar anything worth one obol, but if they wished, they took a dinar for it. Thus everything ceased and stopped. End quote. Procopius tells us people went mad, either because of the disease or because they became demented with suffering. Quote, those gripped by the madness of dementia could not sleep and became delusional, imagining that people were attacking them to kill them. They became hysterical and fled at a run, shouting loudly. End quote. The plague was a random killer. Procopius says some who contracted it survived, while others died. His confidence in the 6th century medical profession was limited, to say the least. Quote, the most eminent doctors predicted that many would die who shortly afterwards were unexpectedly freed of all their maladies, and they also claimed many would survive who perished almost immediately. End quote. Procopius is explicit that there was no cure. Quote, there was no cause behind this disease that any human reason could grasp, for in all cases the outcome made little sense. Some were saved by taking baths, others were harmed by it. Many who were neglected died, but many others, paradoxically, survived. Likewise, the same treatment produced different results in different patients. End quote. As for numbers, according to John, to begin with, the plague, quote, began to assault the class of the poor who lay in the streets. It happened that 5,000 and 7,000 or even 12,000 and as many as 16,000 of them departed this world in a single day. End quote. In total, he says, about half the population of Constantinople died. That's 300,000 or more people. The officials gave up counting, he says, once the number exceeded 230,000. The most immediate problem was burying the dead. The plague struck so suddenly that there was chaos. There were simply too many dead to bury in the normal manner. Because entire households would die together, often no one was even left to bury their relatives. At first, where possible, corpses were taken to the seashore and dumped into the sea, so that, according to John, the corpses, quote, piled high on the entire seashore like flotsam on great rivers, and the pus flowed, discharging itself into the sea. End quote. The stench from the dead bodies was overpowering. Suddenly, Justinian burst into action. Both John and Procopius tell the same story. He appointed a highly competent and fearless administrator, Theodore, as a sort of emergency plague minister with absolute powers reporting directly to the emperor. John records that Justinian instructed him, quote, to take and spend as much gold as was necessary, end quote. His first step was to get the dead bodies out of the city. He had enormous pits dug, capable of taking 70,000 corpses each, across the Golden Horn in the neighbourhood of Sikai, which is modern Galata. Officials paid the common people to take their dead in wheelbarrows and carts to these new graves, promising generous payment for each load of corpses. Highly paid teams of workmen scoured the city, removing corpses, often having to go into houses, according to John, where entire families lay rotting. Soon the city was rid of its dead, and Procopius tells us, quote, "A foul stench wafted from Sikai to the city, bringing even more grief to its people," end quote. But at least the city was free of its dead. Procopius says the plague raged for 4 months before it abated. John leaves us with the most moving scenes when he describes the burial pits crowded with corpses flung pell-mell on top of each other, crushed together like a winepress of God's wrath, which becomes his favourite metaphor for the plague. Meanwhile, back in Justinian's palace, John tells us it, quote, "was overwhelmed and overcome by sorrow. The emperor and the empress, to whom myriads and thousands of commanders and the whole great senate had bowed and paid honour every day, were now miserable and, like everybody, sank into grief, served only by a few," end quote. Indeed, Procopius tells us even Justinian succumbed to the plague. But he survived, something which he seems to have ascribed to the medical saints Cosmas and Damian, who became such celebrities for their reputed abilities to cure people of the plague that the Persian Shah Khosroes even demanded they be sent to him when he negotiated a peace with Justinian. Others were less fortunate. Tribonian, architect of Justinian's legal reforms, died probably in 542. So how should we measure the real impact of the plague? Did it cause an economic recession, and how much did it weaken the Roman state? Historians are still divided on this. The traditional view has favoured a fairly speedy economic recovery. This is largely based on archaeological evidence suggesting the great cities of late antiquity, like Ephesus and Sardis, were destroyed by the enormous Roman-Persian War of the early 7th century, as we'll discuss in future episodes, and not by depopulation as a result of the plague. But this view is increasingly open to question. It now looks more likely that while the great cities continued to function after the plague, they were much smaller than before. It's now widely agreed that around half of the population of the Roman Empire died in the plague. Discovery of new burial sites also points to wider depopulation in the countryside than previously thought. The plague was not just confined to the cities. Another key point is that the plague didn't suddenly disappear. Quite the opposite. Historians think it remained active in Western Eurasia from 541 until as late as 749. 8 plague outbreaks have been recorded in Constantinople alone in this period. After the first one in 542, it struck again in 558, then 573, then 586, and in 599. In the 7th and 8th centuries, the incidence greatly reduced, but there were further outbreaks in 619, 698, and the last one in 747. This prolonged culling of the population is consistent with the other evidence we have for depopulation and lower economic output in the Dark Ages. But back to Justinian's reign, what was its real impact on the empire in the 540s? Some of Justinian's first actions were simply practical necessities, such as burying the dead, as I described above. He also had to deal with the problem of people dying intestate, i.e. without a will, as a result of the rapidity of the plague spread. So he instituted a method for property to be fairly distributed, where the beneficiaries were either all dead or not named. He also enacted legislation to restrict blasphemy in recognition of the widely held view that the plague was, as John said, the winepress of God's wrath. Procopius amusingly describes how when the plague first struck, quote, people gave up the immorality of their lifestyles and became religious to an extreme degree, end quote. But only to reverse this when they survived and, quote, became even worse than they had been before, end quote. But the most important issue for Justinian was taxation. Common sense suggests the plague caused a massive fall in tax revenues. If we assume that nearly half the empire's population was killed by the pandemic, presumably tax revenues fell by a similar or even greater amount, as people were simply not there to pay tax. And the economic collapse consequent upon the breakdown of trade meant that even those that survived didn't have the means to pay their normal taxes. The result was a fiscal crisis, and for the first time since the 3rd century AD, the state resorted to devaluing the currency. Procopius says Justinian instructed Peter Barsamis, the head of the treasury, who Procopius typically reviles in his secret history, to strike lightweight gold solidi. These were debased to a weight of 20 silver coins from its customary 24. Our information on this is extremely limited, but it seems to have happened in direct response to the first outbreak of the plague in 542-3, or possibly a little bit later in 547. And it was clearly done because there was simply not enough tax revenue to pay soldiers and civil servants. Fortunately for the Roman economy, it was a one-off, and Justinian quickly reverted back to the solidus's normal weight. I say fortunate because the effects of debasing the coinage were always self-defeating. Although nominal payments to soldiers and civil servants could be met more easily in the short term with debased coins, the longer-term result was always inflation. People weren't fools and demanded more of these coins to reach a similar value to the old gold standard, and inflation crippled commerce and trade, which requires a stable currency to ensure profit margins are maintained. We also know there was serious wage inflation among the lower classes because of labour shortages caused by the high death toll of the plague. This phenomenon also occurred during the 14th century Black Death. In Justinian's reign, we know the exchange rate between copper coins and gold coins changed dramatically. In the Roman monetary system, there was no fixed number of bronze coins, called follies, required to buy a golden solidus. Instead, the number fluctuated according to the demand for labour. In the decade following the plague's first outbreak, the number of follies per solidus halved from some 360 to 180, meaning labourers' wages doubled. Justinian tried to control this by imposing wage controls, such as Diocletian had done in the 3rd century. But as Diocletian experienced, this probably achieved little, since people paid whatever the true market price was by resorting to black market deals. The high death toll of the plague also meant agricultural land was frequently abandoned, and this caused taxes to fall. Controversially, Justinian assigned abandoned agricultural land to neighbouring landowners or communities and made them liable for the associated taxes. Not surprisingly, this was deeply resented. Some historians have speculated the effects of the plague were not as disastrous as the war with Persia in the early 7th century, which would see widespread destruction of the urban centres of late antiquity and pave the way for the Arab conquests. I don't fully agree with this. I suggest the Justinianic plague was an unparalleled catastrophe, just as devastating as the Black Death would be 800 years later for medieval Europe. Historians now describe the 14th and 15th centuries as the crisis of the late Middle Ages, when the hitherto buoyant European population and economy went into a spiral of decline. I suggest the same thing happened to the Eastern Roman Empire. And in future episodes, we'll look at how this might have made it more vulnerable to the Arab conquests. The Black Death crippled medieval Europe, and I suggest the Justinianic plague did the same for the Roman Empire. And that ends this episode. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. And in the next episode, which will be in a week's time on the 18th of May, we'll continue with the amazing story of the Age of Justinian. And in the meantime, I'd like to ask a favour. If you like the podcast, could you recommend it to a friend? And if you listen to it on Spotify, could you click the star rating? That would be fabulous. And of course, do also check out my website, nickholmesauthor.com. Link in the show notes to find maps, blogs, and a free ebook. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.